This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
Helen Ziller, it's a pleasure talking to you on the eve, of course. I think it's about less than 2 weeks or just about 2 weeks before you head off to that election process. You head off to your conference. All things done. I know you're the person who looks after the mechanics in the background. You look after all the detail. You look after the structures. You make sure all the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed. Everything in order, Helen, for 2 weeks from now?
We've got a fabulous conference organizing committee, mm-hmm. and they've been doing their work really, really well. Mm-hmm. I slot into their meetings to make sure that things are up to scratch, but I have never had to intervene. They're doing a very, very good job.
Mm. You know, I had John Steenhuisen here about 2 weeks ago, and John Steenhuisen said he's going to make sure that, you know, he doesn't get elected on April the 1st. He's going to try to get elected on April the 2nd. So that,
yeah,
he was like, you know what, Denzel, I'm just going to try. You know, April the 1st just doesn't do it for me. How about you, Helen?
Well, April the 1st does it for me very, very much because it's my granddaughter's birthday on April the 1st. She made fools of us all. She was supposed to come on April the 19th and surprised us all by coming on April the 1st. So that's a big day for me.
All right. Helen, talking about big days. Listen to this, Helen.
Oh, happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. For you're a jolly good fellow. You are a jolly good fellow. You're a jolly good fellow. And so say all of us, so say all of us, and so say all of us, you are a jolly good fellow, you're a jolly good
Helen, your birthday was on the 9th of March, and Helen, and of course you didn't invite me to that particular party, so, you know, there you go, Helen. I just thought, you know.
I wasn't having a party, Helen. Working very, very hard, I can tell you. But thank you very much. On the 9th of March, it was exactly a week ago tonight.
Absolutely.
I was addressing a meeting in Barrydale, so yeah.
Mm. Helen, it's been a long, long, long path for you. You know, from journalistic, you know, days to all sorts of other career things that you've done in your life, and you're looking for re-election in this particular position. You know, chairperson, Federal Council. Let me ask you this: you must still be enjoying the job, then.
Yes, I'm loving the job. You know, I'm completely passionately committed to South Africa's success as a democracy.
Mm.
And I think the DA is the key to that. And I've still got a lot of energy and I think a lot to contribute.
Mm.
And I've been asked to stand again. And I've just heard tonight that I'm uncontested now.
Ah, yes. Okay.
You know, it's nice for me. It makes things a very smooth ride. Mm.
So let me say congratulations then already, thank Helen, you. Because of course it's a shoe-in now. It doesn't really matter what happens then, you know, you're the only one on the ballot. So congratulations, Helen.
Yes, that is, you are the first journalist to know. No one else knows that.
Mm.
And I don't know why Lungile Phenyane withdrew at all.
Mm.
She's certainly under absolutely no pressure to do
well,
so.
Well, she wants to give John Steenhuisen a hard time, maybe, because she's also there.
No, she's withdrawn from three positions, as I understand it.
Oh, right, okay.
From the leadership contest and from the chair of Federal Council, which is the position that I've put my hat in the ring for, and then the Federal Finance Chair she's withdrawn from.
Okay, so congratulations, Helen.
Thank you very much.
Mm. Helen, then we were talking about you still enjoying the job, and you're looking for what's the term that you'd be in the position
it's
for?
It's a second term. That's a second
No, but how many years, Helen, would it be?
Well, we have a 3-year term.
It's a 3-year term, right.
We have 3-year terms, yes.
Mm. Helen, making progress in that particular position. Obviously, you want to finish what you started. You came back, obviously, you know, and looked at that position and saw it as a very strategic position where you could make a difference. You then are in that particular position. You know, are you making progress? Is there still a lot of work to be done, or is it a continuation of, you know, just looking ultimately climaxing at with the election next year?
Well, there's always work to be done, and especially if you're giving a party machine a major overhaul, as we're doing at the moment, and we are revising all of our systems, our structures, our processes, making sure that they all work seamlessly together, making sure that everything from the branch right through to the federal executive aligns, making sure that everything from candidate selection to policy to discipline to branch management and organization, right through to running election campaigns and communication strategies. Everything's aligned. And it is an enormous task. It's a very big organization. It deals with a lot of resources, both human and financial. And it is run in a free and fair and open manner. Absolutely clearly according to the rules and the constitution for each and every member. And that's how we like it, and that's why the DA works. We've got very strong internal institutions that work well and efficiently, and that's why we can function as a political party.
Helen, the election of next year then, would you see that as ultimately, you know, the pinnacle of what you've been working on in the last couple of years and where you're now going to be, you know, unopposed in this new position, so you'll continue in the position. How then do you see next year's election in relation to your position at the moment and the work you're doing? Do you see that particular election as a particular place where, you know, the result will indicate what you've put in, the hours you've put in, the kind of work you've put in? Would it be reflected in that particular election? Do you look at that election with that in mind, or is it just another election that's going to come the DA's way, and you know, the DA will fight it because, you know, that's what the DA does?
Well, that is what the DA does, and of course every election that we go into is a very important milestone for us. We never take elections casually at all. We work extraordinarily hard for them. But you must understand that parties go through cycles. You know, there's an up escalator and a down escalator in history. And sometimes you're on the up escalator and sometimes you're on the down escalator. And it's the same for political parties. It's not an upward trajectory all the time. And those parties that go more on the up escalator than the down escalator are those that can see where problems have arisen, can diagnose very accurately the cause of those problems, and can self-correct on the basis of values and principles. And I'm very proud to say that the DA is that kind of party. I've been in the party for long enough to know that we are good at dealing with crises, because we do face crises. We faced a very big one in the year 2001 when our party, which was a year old, split and broke up. And we had a very serious setback, and we went back very badly. And it took us 10 years from that, from 2001 to 2011, to get back to the support levels that we'd had in 2000. So when you have a major setback, it takes a long time to recover. But we did recover, and we recovered very well because we could diagnose what the problem was. We could focus on core principles. We could restructure and regroup and consolidate on the basis of those principles and then get into a period of growth again. And, you know, 2019 was equally traumatic for the DA, but we've been able to focus very, very clearly on the diagnosis of the problem. Get back to our core values and principles.
Was that the Musi moment?
Yes, the Musi moment was a very, very bad crisis for the DA. And we have diagnosed, we have organized, we have strategized, and we've consolidated out of that. The first phase when you're correcting from a crisis is to consolidate. And we've consolidated well, and we can now slowly start moving into an era of regrowth.
Then, up escalator, down escalator, where are you as the DA at this particular point? Are you on the up escalator?
Well, we certainly came on the down escalator in 2019.
Right.
And then when you go on the down escalator, you stand on the floor lower down, and you make sure that you line up all of your elements to go onto the up escalator again. So I think we're on that floor, we're consolidating, and we are contemplating what it takes to step onto the up escalator again.
Helen, I need to ask you, what do you do differently within the DA? You know, and the DA is the official opposition. So maybe just give us some understanding. You know, COPE comes around and they do pretty well. They get decent numbers in the first election. And then they get to a place where they are a fragment of a percentage point. You know, Bantio Lamisa's particular party looked well at one particular point and did well in an election and then gets to a fragmentation of, you know, a percentage point. The PAC, the same, more or less. All these political parties that have seemingly or, you know, needed to or wanted to seemingly do well maybe in the first election and people do go and vote for them. And then they just, you know, retract and get back to a percentage point of 1, 2, or 3. The Freedom Front Plus is also around those particular numbers. The EFF is a little different. You know, they've stabilized on looks like they are 10 or 11%, and looks like even if I had to predict in another election, they'd more or less maybe be there. But the DA has grown as a party and achieved, I think, numbers of 26, maybe even 27%. What have you done to ensure that you were not like the other political parties who came about, you know, did something magical and then you know, just went back to a kind of percentage point party? What have you done a little differently in the DA?
It's a very insightful question, Denzel, and I'll answer it by giving you a fact that the DA is the only party in South Africa, the only one, that has managed to build really strong, lasting and resilient internal institutions and organizations. So when I say internal institutions, we have a constitution and we have regulations that provide a framework for everything we do. Now, what you do in a party is lots of things. First of all, let's say candidate selection is a very complex and challenging process. And we run those, and our branches, and right the way up the party, understands how they're engaged, how they're involved, how one sphere elects another sphere, and how the situation is done transparently and according to rules that everybody understands. Our disciplinary systems, our regional and provincial congresses and decision-making structures, our federal structures, our governance unit, our internal administration from human resources right through to communication. It's all codified, all organized, and it is all well managed. And it's all accountably managed. And everybody understands the rules. They all know where they fit in, even if they're the lowliest branch member. They all know that they can stand for higher structures and get elected to them. They know that we welcome elections internally. And there's no way that the DA can ever degenerate into a personality cult or a patronage network. Now, the ANC gets to where they are because they are a patronage network. People see power as a means of getting contracts, tenders, jobs, and enriching themselves through corruption. And it's the need to be close to that network of resources that holds the ANC together. And that means that when they lose power, they've got nothing else, while they crumble completely, as they have in the Western Cape, of having been out of power since 2006 here. So that is why they've just disintegrated in the Western Cape. The ANC can't do what we do, and all of those other opposition parties that you mentioned never got out of the starting blocks because they never even held a first proper Congress. Those are leadership cults with a leader that never gets contested and never actually builds those institutions that are more powerful than he is.
Let me ask you a question that I sometimes look at and I wonder, you know, why things are what they are. So 2016, I think we have local government elections, right?
Yes.
And then the ANC, people predict is, wow, they at their worst, couldn't be at their lowest, years and ample opportunity for all official oppositions just to, you know, hammer at those numbers that they have. And then we have a general election, and people think, wow, you know, the ANC at its lowest. You listen to people talking and saying, watch this election. And, you know, we carry on, and then we get to 2024, and people are now predicting again the ANC back at its lowest levels. One would then assume, one would look at previous results and say, why didn't the DA do so much better in the last election with the ANC potentially, as we do narrate, at its lowest point at that particular time? It will be again, maybe, at its lowest point in 2024 again. Why has the DA not been able to get past that magical figure of 25-26% with an ANC that's basically asking, you know, to be basically, and let me use this word, clobbered at the polls? And, you know, we've had all sorts of tragedies. We've had all sorts of alarm bells ringing for them. We've seen, you know, Zondo commissions, and yet, you know, the DA, you know, is not capable of just getting past that 25-26% number. It seems to be the magical number. Why is that, Helen? Helen?
The miracle for me, Denzel, not that we don't do better. The miracle for me is that we do so well.
Okay.
And that is in a context where people like you, who give a kind of very first world analysis of politics, people should vote on performance. People should vote on comparative analysis of how parties do in government, etc. That is a very, very first world analysis of how you look at political parties. Henry Kissinger, when he was here in 2010, explained it to me in a very different way. He said, no party can ever crack a non-racial, principled support base in South Africa because of the depth of ethnic, cultural, and identity divisions. And they are so powerful that they overcome every other so-called rational Western analysis of how political choice is made. And he was saying to me quite openly, I'm quite amazed that a party that stands for liberal democracy in the way that the DA does so well. And you will have seen the recent polls that we have now have been done on the DA support base and the composition of the DA support base. We're the only party that has one third of its support from black people, one third of its support from colored people, and one third of its support from white people. That is fantastic. That's exactly what we want. We want to be inclusive, and we want people from all groups to support us. But it takes a long time before people are able to make that move. And the ANC has got such deep roots, especially in rural areas. It's becoming a rural party more and more, the ANC. And it's got such deep roots in the rural areas, especially with people who live a rural life and more in traditional political systems. To break that through a constitutional democracy, which is a very, very different system based on a very different set of assumptions, is an enormous challenge. So if you look at all the metros, the ANC was beaten well below 50% in almost all of them. And you will see that the ANC is dying as an urban party, and that will absolutely continue. But it is very, very hard to ensure that we pull together a support base of people who don't default to race, ethnicity, and other factors, but default to who governs best and why better government is in everybody's interests, especially the interests of the poor. If you have to ask me which party stands for the poor and the unemployed, there's only one answer, and that's the DA. And all of the statistics bear that out. For example, the latest quarterly labor force survey, which looks at employment trends in the economy and comes out three times a year or four times a year, in another 3 months, the quarterly labor force survey found that 169,000 jobs had been created in the whole of South Africa. Of those 169,000 jobs, 167,000 of them were created in the Western Cape. That means all eight other provinces combined created 2,000 jobs. The Western Cape created 167,000 jobs. Now, you tell me, on the basis of that statistic, not generated by the DA, generated by Statistics South Africa, which is under the national government, if that's the conclusion they're coming to, which party is best for the unemployed?
Okay.
And you see, the unemployed actually know that. They vote with their feet. They go to where the DA governs.
So,
because they know that.
So here's the complexity then, Helen. You've really raised a complex issue and pointed out, you know, that some of the rationale that I was using would be a first world one. But you know, I understand the dynamics, and of course my understanding of I would bring that first world, you know, example into there, because it's just something that's in front of us. You know, when you do look at a ruling political party and it is on the back foot all the time, you do want to ask yourself, why are the other parties not making particular inroads into that particular space? It's
yes.
a natural question.
Yes, of course it's a natural question. And, it's a very good question.
Yes,
but there are about 200 opposition parties.
And then how do you get...
The DA is the one that's done so well.
And then how do you get past the complexity there, Helen, that you've just pointed out, whereby you say, you know, Henry Kissinger then points out to you this complexity also.
Well, I knew it.
How then do you really then get past, in your political space, that particular dynamic to become the party then of choice in numbers? You know, the statistics from StatsSA might indicate a particular, you know, narrative, but in numbers, how do you overcome that particular crisis or problem that you've just indicated to me?
The truth is, it takes time. I know we haven't got time, but the fact is, it takes time. It takes time in homogenous societies to move from kings and tribal leaders, as they had in England many centuries ago, to a full-blown democracy. That's in a homogenous country. A plural society such as South Africa, with inbuilt majorities and minorities and ethnic groups and all of that sort of thing, it is far more complex and takes much, much, much longer. And with the education disparities that we have in South Africa, and the income disparities and the class disparities, all of those add very many more complex layers. And obviously politics is an emotional thing. It's not a rational thing. And all of those factors have a far more powerful influence on the way people see the world than, for example, a rational analysis around who governs better. But in the end, who governs better matters hugely. In fact, it matters the most. Good government is the very basis of a successful society, because you will never have a growing economy without good government. Without a growing economy, you will never have jobs and you will have increasing poverty. Without a good economy, you won't have taxpayers and there'll be less and less money for social grants, etc. So good government is at the root of all of that. Good, uncorrupt, delivering, competent, professional government. And people are going to have to learn that lesson probably the very hard way. And tragically, we've been trying to say this for years and years and years, but other factors such as the leader is white then comes and overwhelms every other bit of analysis.
And that's the complexities of what you've raised within, you know, how you raised it and kind of the complexity that I'm asking you to speak to. Those dynamics just are there.
Well, they're
realistic for you, aren't they?
Well, you see, that's why when I was the leader, I moved so fast and so hard to diversify the leadership of the party. But instead of making us go up in votes, it ended up making us go down in votes. The most votes that the DA has ever got was in 2014. Numerically, the most votes ever was in 2014. And in that election, I was the leader, and I decided after that, I've taken the DA as far as I can go, let me step back. And I made it a very conscious effort to say, I need to be succeeded by a black leader. But in the first election, that national election, That was 2019. That was a national and provincial election. After 2014, we went backwards. We didn't go forward, and we went backwards quite significantly.
Mm.
So, you know, it's not that simple. I mean, what that taught us is good leadership is more important than the race of the leader.
Mm.
Yet everybody hammers on race all the time, and race is an important factor in South Africa.
Mm.
But it cannot be the overriding factor if you want an efficient and effective and delivering organization.
20 minutes to the top of the hour. My guest here, Helen Zille, DA's Federal Council Chairperson, of course, heading into no more of an election for her, but of course there is an election process that the DA will go through on the 1st and 2nd of April. Let's go to Safudi in Randfontein. Safudi?
Denzel, good evening to you and the Helen of Troy there. How are you, ma'am?
She's good, Safudi. She's really good.
You know, Denzel, DA and through Helen, they must take a mirror image, you know, at themselves. I hold no brief for my money, you know, because he was used as a bait to get the black vote.
Mm.
And that failed. And Tony Leon called him a failed experiment. You know, an experiment, it's something that you take to the lab to get the results. You put it through a litmus test, you know. And for us who are black people, if words like that are mentioned, and you bring an imperialist like Henry Kissinger, who arrogates himself a right of knowing the dynamics of this country without even having stayed in this country, it's unbecoming. That's why DA is viewed with suspicion. And I venture to tell her that DA is also corrupt. Look what happened in Tshwane, Denzel. Billions that were lost. And then we ought to look. Corruption in this country, Denzel, is systematic. It doesn't have color, and it doesn't reside in ANC. And the minute you get into coalition with the ANC that's corrupt, you're going to be soiled. You can't survive the systematic corruption. That time, Herman Mashaba was there, and Tony Leon, Herman Mashaba came, and Tony Leon came to him and spoke about somebody who must get the tender. So there's no difference. Politics in this country is a corrupt system, and politicians are birds of a feather. Good evening to you.
And that's a foodie. Let's go to Prince in Midrand quickly.
Good day. Good evening, Brad Denzel, and to
Helen Zille, yes.
Mm. I think there is a very huge gash, a false line in her analysis of her party and their performance.
Mm.
Especially when it relates to race. She is trying very hard to say that when she was leader, well, the DA performed well.
Mm.
And then after she pursued the Musi Maimanis to come and join the party and whatnot, the party underperformed.
Mm.
And in effect, what she was trying to say there is that, well, the black people came in and then they underperformed. That's racial. Mm. That's the one part. However, the other part that I find problematic is that where she's refusing, in effect, to actually acknowledge that what happened there is when she was a leader, black people voted for the DA. When she left the DA, or whether when Musi Maimane became the leader of the DA, white people left the DA and voted for the FF Plus and them. Now, there is a very big race element that she needs to acknowledge and stop fluffing about there. Let's acknowledge that these things actually are impacting our politics, and they're impacting our politics precisely because there's the likes of her that actually do not want to deal with that fact that these things are happening.
Sure. Prince in Midrand. Let's go to Karabo in Mogwase. Karabo?
Yes, good evening.
Sure, Karabo.
The first question is the position of the DA, or maybe her personal position, as far as land ownership is concerned, in particular in the rural areas. take into cognizance things like Ingonyama Trust? What is their position in such ownership? The second question will be, as everybody is saying, SMMEs and entrepreneurship is the new thing, but majority of blacks particular are unable to raise finance. What is it that the DA is selling that is different, that can transform the financial sector so that the young people in the townships and in particular without collaterals can access? The last thing, what is their difference between Freedom Front and DA in such a way that the voters of DA shifted to Freedom Front? How do you differentiate them in terms of policy?
Karabo, I've got you. James in Centurion. James?
Hi, gentlemen. Good evening to you.
Sure, man.
Good evening to the CIC of the AFF. Two questions. One, why him personally, he seemed to have an obsession with Cyril Ramaphosa than the ANC policies? Yep. Why an individual than the ANC policies? Secondly, does he believe if they remove Cyril, Paul Mashatile comes in, that the policies of the ANC will change?
James in Centurion. Let's go to Mathlamola in 118 Bosch. Mathlamola?
Yes, good evening. Yeah, Mr. Taylor. Let me just say that, she holds a very powerful position, that woman. And to a large extent, firstly, let me just say, I just want to raise 2 points quickly. Firstly, let me say, the fact that the voters shifted from DA to Freedom Front Plus, the white voters per se, shows that really, generally speaking, whites are not committed to really, they've never been really committed to this country, honestly. Mm. I mean, still to this day, they don't see us as capable, That is why I have a serious problem with whites generally, because if you look at everything, from the economy, they don't even care or even bother to learn a language, just at least one language of ours in this country. And so whites in this country, including Helen herself, are a big problem and a big obstacle in taking this country forward. If you would allow me, sir, just to raise the second one. Mm. The issue of coalitions. If you listen to Bo Herman Mashaba, if you listen to Bo EFF, Bo PA, they are blaming her specifically, for giving back the cities, Johannesburg, Tshwane, Ekurhuleni, back to the ANC. Because, they are blaming her that she's stubborn, she doesn't want to compromise, she wants to act like she's some boss, like she's, And so this woman is very, very, very dangerous. And, she's not good for the coalition.
Mathlamola, I'm going to end it there. It's 11 minutes to the hour. Helen Zilla. Helen, you've been writing all of that down, Helen?
No, not all of it. Just a couple of points.
Sure.
A couple of points, dental.
Sure.
You can just go through my call. I haven't got everybody's name. I think Sifudi was the first person.
Sifudi. And Helen, you can just speak to the point sometimes.
I'll speak to all the points very quickly. Number one, Tony Leon did not call Missy Maimane an experiment, let alone a failed experiment. No human being is an experiment, obviously. What he said was that the DA's embrace of identity politics was a failure. And the embrace of identity politics happened under the leadership of Musi Maimane. That does not mean to say that Musi Maimane is seen by anyone as a failed experiment, not at all. No human being is an experiment. But the embrace of identity politics was a political direction embraced during that era, and that failed. And that is the point that Tony Leon was making, and that's the only point he was making. Mm. It's also totally untrue, for example, that Tony Leon tried to get a tender under Mashaba. It's totally untrue. And anybody who says that is just picking up total gossip and spreading something that has no basis in fact. So these kinds of things must stop shaping perceptions because they are not true. Then this notion that whites are racist because they won't vote for black people. Numerically, most people of all races voted for the DA in 2014. But whites overwhelmingly voted for the DA in the 2016 local government elections, overwhelmingly. Now, usually, fewer people vote in a local government election than in a national election. But in that particular election, white people and Afrikaans-speaking whites in general overwhelmingly voted for the DA with a black leader. So that is absolutely not true. Furthermore, just till last week, we had a by-election in a ward in Umzunduzi. And we had a black candidate, Reggie Kanyile, in an overwhelmingly white ward. And 96% of the voters voted for Reggie Kanyile. So white voters in the DA would love to vote for a good candidate, and they don't care what the color of that candidate is, which is our philosophy. Reggie Kanyile came through the DA's very stringent merit selection basis. He emerged as the best candidate, obviously on a non-racial basis. I was there when we spoke to a very packed meeting in the constituency. He gave a brilliant speech and explained why the community should vote for him, and they did. 96% of them did. And there are many examples of where the DA does that. I mean, Musi Maimane was elected as the leader of the DA by something like 90% of the vote, if I remember correctly. So, and that, of course, is all race groups in the DA. But, I mean, it's complete nonsense to say that white people won't vote for black leaders in the DA. I'm waiting for the day that the ANC has a white leader, and I'd also like to see the same number of black people vote for the ANC under a white leader as they would under a black leader. You see, the truth is, white people in South Africa are very happy to vote for a black leader. I'm not sure it works the other way around. Otherwise, there would not be such a lot of criticism of the race of DA leaders if it was the other way around. So the truth is exactly the opposite of what your critics are saying. Then, did somebody called Karabo, I think, was it Kabelo? I didn't quite get his name, was saying about the Ingonyama Trust. We have a very clear position. Land, especially fertile land, like in the Ingonyama Trust, should be producing food and jobs. Everywhere in the world where you go, especially in poor societies, agriculture can be a very important bridge out of poverty, both food and jobs. And fertile land has to be productive, otherwise it is just expensive dirt. And vast tracts of areas in the Ingonyama Trust are not productive. They don't provide food or jobs to anybody but the very immediate people who live there. And they don't provide the kinds of foods and jobs that they should be if they had different ownership patterns. And we do believe that people, individuals, should own land. Not everybody wants to farm. Most people would rather own some land in an urban area and have a job, which is another thing that we encourage very strongly. But we encourage rural ownership patterns that will enable the land to produce food and jobs, which is not happening in the huge areas of South Africa that are in black hands. So 70% of KwaZulu-Natal is in black hands, but that most of that land is producing very little food and very few jobs. And that is the big challenge that we face. And we need to look at that challenge squarely and honestly in the face. Then the Freedom Front and DA differences are absolutely fundamental. But the reason that we lost some voters to the Freedom Front Plus was after we started embracing identity politics between 2016 and 2019. And that our voters of all races did not like, because they joined the DA because they want a non-racial party. And when we started grasping identity politics, what was called woke in those days, they did not like that. And that is the reason that they moved away from the DA. Now, let me just look at this. If Cyril is removed, what about Paul Mashatile? Well, you know, Cyril is removed, Paul Mashatile takes over, then we'll probably do a deal with the EFF. And if that happens, let me tell you, that is the day that there is massive disinvestment from South Africa and hundreds of thousands of more people unemployed and thrown into extreme poverty, the tax base massively weakened, the government runs out of money for social grants, and people will see that far from from getting better, things can get much, much worse.
Helen, okay.
All right, yeah. Then there was this massive generalization from a guy from Olivenhout Post, was his name, Maslamola.
Maslamola.
Yeah, he was saying something on the lines of that whites are not committed to this country. You know, that is an unbelievable racist generalization. How does he generalize about every single white in South Africa, including those who put every ounce of energy into making this country work, to building its infrastructure with other people, obviously, to making sure that this, the economy works and stuff. But to say that whites are a problem and a big obstacle in South Africa, does he think if every white packed up tomorrow and left, South Africa would be a wonderful place for everybody? Because if he thinks that, he better revise his thinking, and it proves the point that I said at the very beginning. This kind of thinking is why it's so difficult to make progress in this country.
Helen, let me ask you about the Agang moment. Was that an opportunity missed? And do you guys still chat about that particular moment? It seemed like it was going somewhere, and then I just think the party just decided otherwise. Was it an opportunity missed?
Well, what part of Agang was an opportunity missed?
I'm talking about that merger of a sense that was beginning to be spoken of and beginning to happen there.
Well, you see, Mampila couldn't make up her mind one way or the other, and I'm not the kind of person who likes things being dragged out and uncertainty everywhere. I just said it's a particular point. That's it. If you can't make up your mind, then moving on.
Helen, well, let's end the conversation on 2024. What are you spoke of major overhaul of the party. You said we've just gone through a major overhaul of the party. We're getting ready for those particular elections. Those elections are not far off. Mainly, I think about just over a year from now, because they'll be held in, you know, June, July, August, maybe around that particular point. 2024?
Well, you know, the overhaul has not finished. As I said, it took 10 years from 2001 to 2011 to get back to where we had been when the massive split and crash came in 2001. But we worked our way back, and the DA is currently working its way back. And 2024 will be a milestone on that road.
Sure. Helen, I want to say thank you so much for coming on to Power Perspective tonight. Well, the fact that you're uncontested now means that, you know, you're basically a walk-in, they say a shoe-in for that particular position. Congratulations. And yes, and well, I don't even have to say good luck, Helen, because you don't need it anymore. Helen, thank you so much for coming on to Power Perspective tonight.
It's always a pleasure, Denzel. Thank you. Thanks so much.
And that's Helen Ziller, the DA's Federal Council Chairperson.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.